This is Kathy coming to you on Wednesday, April the 29th. I am going to be reading the Herald and Review from the Decatur area. Starting with the headline on the front page talks about the storm Thursday. Benefits and damage weighed around the storm brings hail and high wind. Monday's storms were record-breaking. According to meteorologist Chuck Schaefer with the National Weather Service in Lincoln, rain measurements at the Decatur airport totaled 2.52 inches. The water treatment plant measured 2.09. No matter what site you look at, that's a record for the date, he said. Monday's heavy amount of precipitation may help alleviate the drought that has been a concern since the beginning of the year. Quite a bit of that does run off, but some did soak in, Schaefer added. There are periods where it wasn't a complete downpour. Along with the large amounts of rain, the severe storms brought high winds and large hail to parts of central Illinois. A survey team spent Tuesday studying the areas that had reports of damage. They are looking at a potential tornado damage, Schaefer said. April's small doses of rain have helped the farmers during this year's planting season, but Monday's storms may have been too much. According to Tim Stock, executive vice president for the Macon County Farm Bureau, the rain will help because it's going to replenish the subsoil moisture, he said. It's just going to take a little while to soak in. The large amount of rain in a short time can be damaging. It just saturates really quickly and can wash off topsoil and wash off seedling stock, said. During Tuesday's drive to work, Stock had witnessed only a few fields with standing water. It looks like a lot of it is soaked in already, he said. It was definitely a welcome rainfall. Approximately 50% of the fields in Macon County have been planted, according to the Farm Bureau. While the fields dry up, the farmers can take a break from planting. They will also need the extra time to assess the damage. We'll just have to wait and see if there's any replant areas that they need to do, Stock said. Now the farmers wait for warmer temperatures. It allows what they've already done time to sprout, Stock said. However, any future rain may cause more setbacks. After Tuesday night's predicted rain, the rest of the week is expected to be dry, with temperatures in the seasonal lower 50s and mid-60s. We're always at the mercy of Mother Nature, Stock said, so we just have to wait and see what the conditions are right to go. The heavy rain also prompted the Macon County Conservation District to close the Rock One Springs Fairview Park bike trail and Sand Creek Conservation Area on Tuesday while the water receded. The heavy rainfall also impacted Lake Decatur, pushing the water level above the Nelson Park boat ramp docks and well above the normal shoreline levels. And if you have any questions, contact Annette Beckett at 217-421-6983, and you can follow her on Twitter at DonetteBHR. Also on the front page, Republicans back the bill to fund the ballroom by Richard Cowan from Reuters. Just days after a shooting at dinner that President Donald Trump attended, Republicans in Congress are pushing for legislation to fund and speed construction of a White House ballroom, claiming increased security concerns. Senate Budget Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and two fellow Republicans quickly crafted a bill to mainly finance the construction, which already is underway at taxpayers' expense. I'd like the vote as soon as possible to accelerate what America needs, a secure facility for the president and others to meet in, to have a good time, to enjoy themselves without putting the nation at risk, Graham told reporters, adding that underneath the ballroom would be a lot of military stuff. Graham said private donations could be used for buying China and stuff like that. Of the $400 million, Graham said, $332 million would be taxpayer funds that he said were paid for by using customs fees on imported goods. I have never felt the sense of threat that exists today, Graham said, arguing that Trump would not have to leave the secured White House grounds for large events being held in Washington. Neither Trump nor the White House hosted Saturday's dinner, which had about 2,600 guests. Trump already tore down the historic east wing of the White House to begin construction of a massive White House ballroom, which would seat a maximum of 1,000 guests. Trump previously claimed private donations would pay for the estimated $400 million cost of the ballroom project that he demanded. Graham said he wants a vote on a standalone ballroom funding bill, but if that's defeated, he said he would consider an alternate route. He did not rule out trying to put $400 million in a bill Republicans are pushing that would circumvent the need for Democratic support in the narrowly divided Senate. Republican Representative Chip Roy of Texas said in a social media post Sunday that a budget bill Graham and the Republicans are pushing through Congress should include the ballroom. That measure would move through the Senate under a special procedure allowing passage by a 51-vote majority instead of a 60-vote supermajority most bills face. Republicans hold 53 of the Senate's 100 seats. That bill is mainly aimed at funding two Department of Homeland Security law enforcement agencies through fiscal year 2029. On March 31st, a federal judge ruled that the 90,000-square-foot project could only go forward if Congress approved it. On Sunday, freshman Republican Senator Tim Sheehy of Montana said he would seek fast Senate approval of a bill providing for construction of Trump's ballroom. His move would require the consent of all senators, a procedure that often fails on controversial legislation. So far, Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania is the only Democrat in the chamber who publicly indicated his support for the ballroom. Some House Republicans also drafted legislation to ensure completion of Trump's project. On Saturday night, Trump was scheduled to deliver a speech at the annual dinner of the White House Correspondents' Association. The event ended abruptly after a man was apprehended inside the hotel where the event was held, and he allegedly fired shots at a U.S. Secret Service agent. Shortly after the shooting, Trump held a news conference in the White House and said security concerns were more justification to continue building his ballroom. This headline reads, UAE quits oil cartel. Exit from OPEC called a win from President Trump by Maha El-Dahan from Dubai. The United Arab Emirates said Tuesday it will quit OPEC, dealing a heavy blow to the oil producers' group as an unprecedented energy crisis triggered by the Iran war exposes discord among Gulf nations. The loss of the UAE, a long-standing OPEC member, could weaken the group, which usually sought to show a united front despite internal disagreements over geopolitics and production quotas. UAE Energy Minister Suhail Mohammed El-Marouzi told Reuters the decision was taken after a careful look at the regional powers' energy strategies. Asked whether the UAE consulted with OPEC's de facto leader and regional heavyweight, Saudi Arabia, he said the UAE did not raise the issue with any other country. This is a policy decision. It has been done after a careful look at current and future policies related to the level of production, said the energy minister. The UAE's announcement trimmed gains in oil prices on Tuesday. Iran war OPEC. Gulf producers have been struggling to ship exports through the Strait of Hormuz, a choke point between Iran and Oman, through which a fifth of the world's crude oil and liquefied natural gas normally passes, because of Iranian threats and attacks against vessels. Masrouri said that UAE's move, in which it will leave OPEC and OPEC Plus as of May 1st, would not have a large impact on the market because of the constraints in the strait. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allies, including Russia, are known collectively as OPEC, and the UAE was their fourth largest producer. Together, they controlled almost half the world's oil before the war. The International Energy Agency said OPEC Plus saw its share of global oil output fall to 44% in March, from about 48% in February. It is likely to fall further in April as production shut-ins become more pronounced. This opens the door for the UAE to gain global market share when the geopolitical situation normalizes, said Monica Malik, chief economist in ADCB. The exit should be positive for consumers and the broader global economy, she added. The UAE is a regional business and financial hub of one of Washington's most important allies. It has pursued an assertive foreign policy and carved its own sphere of influence across the Middle East and Africa. The UAE recently doubled down on its relationships with the United States and Israel, in which it opened ties in the 2020 Abraham Accords, especially after coming under attack during the Iran war. It views the relationship with Israel as a critical lever for regional influence and a unique channel to Washington. The UAE's exit from OPEC represents a win for the U.S. President Donald Trump, who, in a 2018 address to the UN General Assembly, accused the organization of ripping off the rest of the world by inflating oil prices. Trump also linked the U.S. military support for the Gulf with oil prices, saying that while the U.S. defends OPEC members, they exploit this by imposing high oil prices. The UAE's departure came after Anwar Gargash, a diplomatic advisor for the UAE president, criticized the Arab and Gulf response to recent Iranian attacks in a session at the Gulf Influencers Forum on Monday. Some Gulf leaders met in person Tuesday in Saudi Arabia, a summit that a Gulf official said aimed to craft a response to the thousands of Iranian missile and drone strikes that their nations have faced since the U.S. and Israel launched their war with Iran in late February. The UAE's OPEC exit also comes as a global spare capacity hovers at historically low levels, leaving the oil market increasingly tight. Operating outside the producer group allows the UAE to fully leverage its position as a supplier of some of the world's lowest cost and lowest carbon barrels. Maz Roy noted that the UAE has been a member of OPEC and OPEC Plus for a long time, but he said the world would demand more energy, suggesting his country's move will help meet those needs. Page 2 starts out with, under records, cop homicide suspected hid gun. Authorities say Talley concealed a firearm under a blanket in a Chicago hospital, by Caroline Kubzinski and Sam Charles. Authorities provided some new details Monday about a weekend shooting of two Chicago police officers, including that the man charged, now charged Alfonso Talley, kept a gun hidden under a blanket before firing at the officers at a hospital. Prosecutors have charged 26-year-old Talley with murder, attempted murder, aggravated kidnapping, aggravated battery, escaping from police, aggravated unlawful restraint, armed robbery, possession, and aggravated unlawful use of a weapon as a felon, obstruction of justice, and possession of a fake ID. Talley also had 3 warrants outstanding for his arrest, according to a CPD news release. Talley's case was called midday for a detention hearing at the Layton Criminal Courthouse, where police brass, police union leaders, aldermen, and members of Officer John Bartholomew's family were in attendance. Judge Luciano Panici Jr. ordered Talley detained as the case against him progresses. Officers had brought Talley to the Endeavor Health Swedish Hospital in the Lincoln Square neighborhood for observation after he was arrested in connection with an armed robbery, police have said. Bartholomew was killed and his partner left in critical condition. Talley was seated at a defense table flanked by 5 courtroom deputies and cuffed. He refused to acknowledge the judge when asked for his name several times. "Good morning, sir. Are you Alfonso Talley?" the judge asked. Talley, in a white shirt and gray sweatpants, kept his head down and did not answer. Assistant State's Attorney Mike Picara told Panici that the proffer in the case ran 10 pages. Talley sat silent at the defense table with Cook County Sheriff's deputies standing over him as Picara told Panici he'd been arrested on the heels of an alleged armed robbery at a dollar store then arrested nearby. He allegedly told the police officers arresting him he'd swallowed several bags of drugs, Picara said, and was taken to Swedish Hospital for a CT scan. Talley was undressed and given a hospital gown, Picara said, but kept the blanket over him as he was being prepared for the scan. As soon as Bartholomew uncuffed him from the hospital bed, Picara said, Talley reached underneath the blanket, took out a 10mm handgun, and shot him in the head. He then shot the second officer in the face, Picara said, and shot out a window to escape from the hospital building. How Talley might have gotten a weapon into the hospital has not been disclosed, but federal authorities said the gun was purchased under false pretenses in Indiana. Shortly before the bond hearing for Talley began, federal prosecutors in Indiana revealed that the gun Talley allegedly used to shoot the officers had been illegally purchased at a gun range in 2024. Olivia Burgos was charged in a criminal complaint filed in a U.S. District Court in Hammond with straw purchasing the Glock 29 pistol at Range USA in Merrillville on May 27, 2024. The person she got the gun for, identified only as Individual A, was a convicted felon at the time and barred from buying the gun himself, according to the complaint. According to the complaint, Burgos listed her address on the paperwork in LaPorte, Indiana, but in truth she was living with Individual A in nearby Highland at the time. She also lied by saying she was purchasing the gun for herself and that she had not used drugs, according to the charges. Agents with the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives interviewed Burgos at her current home in Harvey on Saturday, the day of the shooting at the Swedish hospital. She told the officer she's been addicted to fentanyl since April 2024 and lied on the paperwork as she knew if she told the truth, the purchase would have been rejected. Police ultimately arrested Talley underneath a porch on the 2600 block of West Carmen Avenue soon afterward, Picara said. As Picara spoke, a police officer reached out to put her hand on the shoulder of a young man seated in one of the front rows, evidently a family member of one of the two officers. The assistant public defender on the case said they had not yet been able to have a confidential conversation with Talley and asked that they continue the detention hearing to Thursday. She also requested a health care order for him. Panici, visibly frustrated with Talley's refusals to answer the questions, ordered Talley held in custody until then. That order to detain Talley extended to other warrants out for Talley. One was for an alleged lapse in his pre-trial electronic monitoring at the time of the alleged crime, Cook County records show. Judge John F. Lyke had issued a warrant for Talley's arrest March 11th while he was on pre-trial release for a previous armed robbery case, according to court records. The warrant was still active as of Sunday evening. Court records show Talley, a resident of the South Shore neighborhood, has been in and out of prison since 2017, mostly for a series of armed robbery cases. The electronic monitoring arrangement dates back to December 2025, when a bench trial had been scheduled for the case, but continued by agreement, court records show. Documents show Talley had been scheduled to plead in the case January 8th of this year, but there is no record of him actually pleading guilty or not guilty. The next day, January 9th, state prison records show Talley was paroled from Stateville Correctional Center, where he was listed as an absconder. He'd been serving concurrent sentences for 2023 and 24 cases over the possession of a stolen vehicle and battering a police officer. Authorities changed his electronic monitoring conditions to give him limited movement for school or work, records show. The Cook County prosecutors filed a sanctions petition in February, alleging that Talley had violated the terms of his release. The petition contained in court records did not specify the nature of that violation. A pretrial monitoring report for March 11th shows that Talley was first fitted with an ankle monitor in December 11th of last year on the same day as a bench trial before Judge Lyke that appeared to be continued. He had been allowed limited movement Monday through Thursday, but court records show his monitor had alerted two violations within 3 days in early March. On March 9th, the report stated the monitor entered communication loss, sleep mode due to failure to charge. The individual's whereabouts are unknown. After the hearing, John Catanzara, president of the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 7, the union that represents CPD officers, harshly criticized the Safety Act and the county's criminal court judges who have repeatedly released Talley from custody in his prior crimes of violence. "It needs to blank stop," Catanzara said in the lobby of the Layton Criminal Courts building Monday. Asked about the condition of the officer shot on Saturday, Catanzara said, "It's very bad. It's extremely critical. It's not good. It's going to take a miracle." The events allegedly leading to the shooting of the two officers began around 8 a.m. Saturday morning. Albany Park District Police responded to a Family Dollar at 3239 West Lawrence Avenue for a call of an armed robbery in progress. According to police intelligence reviewed by the Tribune, there, officers pursued a man now identified as Talley and one other man who had been robbing the dollar store worker at gunpoint, eventually arresting Talley at the intersection of Kedzie Avenue and Roscoe Street. Per a statement from Endeavor Health, Talley was admitted to the hospital's emergency department around 9 a.m., fired shots at the officers about 2 hours later, and fled the building. A still from surveillance video footage obtained by the Tribune showed the suspect running naked down a street with white patches stuck to his chest. Officials later arrested him in the 2600 block of West Carmen Avenue in Lincoln Square. Bartholomew's neighbors, speaking at their Edison Park block Sunday afternoon, described the slain officer as generous and helpful around their neighborhood. "He had gotten married last year," friends said. Niloufar Hashmi, who lives across the street from the Carmen Avenue home where Talley was found fleeing from police, said she first heard about Saturday's shooting from her neighborhood group chat. Living just a few blocks from Swedish Hospital, she said her family is accustomed to hearing sirens at all hours of the day, but she knew something was different when she saw more policemen in police cars than she had ever seen outside of a movie screen. What's happening in Decatur? Volunteer event to clear honeysuckle. The Macon County Conservation District will host a hands-on volunteer workday removing invasive bush honeysuckle. The event will be from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, May 2nd, at the Griswold Conservation Area in Blue Mound. Volunteers will be working with the district's natural resources team. Bush honeysuckle grows quickly and competes for resources with the our country's native plants, the Conservation District stated in the news release. Due to the dense thickets that this aggressive, invasive plant creates, sunlight cannot filter through to the smaller native plants on the forest floor, which hinders tree and plant regeneration. Volunteers ages 16 and older are invited to join the workday. Gloves and tools will be provided. To register, contact or email mllovegren, that's mllovegren, at macon-ccd.org, or call or text 217-519-9926. Children's Museum to host the Duck Derby. The Children's Museum of Illinois will host its annual Duck Derby from noon to 5 p.m. Sunday, May 3rd at the Museum, 55 South Country Club Road in Decatur. Nearly 3,000 rubber ducks will race through a water track designed by Mueller Company. The winner at the end of the day will come home with $3,000. Duck prices are $10 per duck, 5 ducks for $40, 10 ducks for $75, 20 bucks for $125, or 40 ducks for $200. Other events for the day include paint-by-number math mural, bounce house, rubber duck hunt, and other family activities. Food will be available for purchase. Admission to the museum will be reduced by $2. For more information and to adopt your duck, visit cmofil.org/duck-berry. I'm sorry, that's cmofil.org/duck-derby. Headline, Decatur Man Who Battered and Forced Woman to Work as a Prostitute Gets 6 Years by Tony Reed. Ashanti D. Brownlee, an armed Decatur man who admitted battering a woman and forcing her to work as a prostitute, has been sent to prison for 6 years. The charges against Brownlee, 49, had been headed for a jury trial, but he appeared April 24th in Macon County Circuit Court and said he was ready to take a plea deal. Brownlee then admitted being a felon in unlawful possession of a weapon, and Judge Lindsay Shelton handed down the 6-year sentence. The defendant also pleaded guilty to promoting prostitution, a Class 4 felony, and was sentenced to another 3 years. But the judge ordered that sentence to run concurrent with the 6-year term. Brownlee further pleaded guilty to one count of domestic battery and was sentenced to 533 days in the Macon County Jail. That jail was canceled out with credit for 533 days spent in custody since his arrest in November of 2024. The judge dismissed further charges alleging domestic battery, unlawful restraint, profiteering from prostitution, criminal sexual assault, vehicular invasion, and possession of a firearm with a defaced serial number as part of the plea deal. Brownlee was indicted by a grand jury in September of 2024 on charges that accused him of attacking the female victim and that he knowingly compelled the victim to become a prostitute. Testimony presented to the grand jury claimed Brownlee held the woman against her will in her bedroom and raped her. The defendant, who has a previous conviction for attempted murder out of Cook County, also was ordered to pay a $250 fee to have his DNA added to a criminal database maintained by the state police. This next headline, Trump administration preyed on her name. Mother of a DUI crash victim says Abraham would have hated politicians using her name, by Maggie Doherty. The Trump administration dedicated Operation Midway Blitz in a press release of 20-year-old Katie Abraham of Urbana, who was killed last year in a drunken driving accident by a Guatemalan man residing in the U.S. without legal status. But her mother said the administration never sought her permission to use her daughter's name in the furtherance of its political agenda, an association she says her daughter would not want. Denise Lawrence, Abraham's mother, testified Monday during one of the two final hearings of the Illinois Accountability Commission, a body created by Governor J.B. Pritzker last fall to document misconduct of federal agents amid the Chicago area immigration enforcement campaign. Katie would have hated it, and she would have hated having her name continuing to be used by politicians publicly and on social media, Lawrence told commissioners. The Trump administration preyed on her name and used it in a vile way. Abraham's father, Joe Abraham, has been supportive of President Trump's immigration enforcement campaign, appearing beside the president as he promoted his domestic agenda at the White House last June. He and his current wife were featured in a video released by the Department of Homeland Security, voicing support for increased border security funding. Abraham also penned an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune criticizing Illinois lawmakers for undermining federal immigration policy. If even just one life is saved because of her story, then I know my Katie would be proud that I spoke up, Abraham wrote. As parents, we all process grief in different ways. The best way I know to honor my daughter is to help prevent other families from living this nightmare. The immigration enforcement campaign conducted last fall detained roughly 3,800 people and deported nearly 2,500, the majority of whom had no criminal record, according to an analysis by the Chicago Tribune. It's not how her daughter would want to be remembered, Lawrence said, arguing that DHS should have consulted both parents. It's not for her, Lawrence said. Having my daughter's legacy associated with this violent government operation and their political agenda, instead of the light and positivity that she contributed to the world, is inexcusable and that she would want nothing to do with it. DHS did not respond to a request for comment regarding the use of Abraham's name in the connection with Operation Midway Blitz. 16 Investigation. The testimony from Abraham's mother was featured in the second-to-last hearing to be held by the Commission before it submits a final report with its recommendation to Pritzker on Thursday. Since the Commission was formed last October, it has conducted 16 in-depth investigations in Chicago based on interviews with over 60 eyewitnesses, nearly 100 hours of federal agent body camera footage, and hundreds of hours of footage from surveillance cameras, personal devices, and social media. It also conducted 7 commissioner-led private group listening sessions in different neighborhoods, according to the news release. The investigations included the fatal shooting of Silverio Villegas Gonzalez, a Mexican father of 2, fatally shot by an Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent during a September traffic stop in Franklin Park, and the shooting of Maramar Martinez, a teacher's aide who was shot 5 times by a Border Patrol agent in October. Martinez is expected to testify tomorrow with her lawyer, as is former House Minority Leader Jim Durkin. Epstein case, New Mexico. Zorro Ranch survivors come forward in a probe by Erica Stapleman and Andrew Hay, Reuters. Authorities in New Mexico are trying to determine how many local women and girls were abused by late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein at his isolated Zorro Ranch compound. Several individuals have said they were flown to the ranch and abused by Epstein and his associates. To date, only one, former Santa Fe massage therapist Rachel Benavidez, was known to be from New Mexico. New Mexico Representative Mariana Anaya, who co-sponsored the state's Truth Commission probe into Epstein, told Reuters that the group had been in contact with a number of New Mexico residents who say they were abused at the ranch. I can confirm that we have been reached out to by local alleged victims, Anaya told Reuters in the text message. The Truth Commission is working with the New Mexico Department of Justice to help survivors who may have viable criminal cases bring charges against Epstein co-conspirators, Anaya said. It was the first time the commission had acknowledged contact with local people who say they were abused at the ranch during the quarter century Epstein owned the property. The state reopened its investigation into alleged sex trafficking in the ranch in February, citing the U.S. Department of Justice's release of millions of files on Epstein. They included an email from a person claiming to be a former ranch employee who alleged Epstein buried the bodies of 2 girls in hills outside the property. Epstein and his associates are accused of grooming local teenage girls at his New York and Palm Beach residences, according to court testimony from criminal trials. Event to honor restored Civil War graves. The Soldiers' Plot Cemetery Restoration Project will host a dedication ceremony next month. The free event will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, May 16th at Woodlawn Cemetery in Clinton, with a reception and lunch to follow at the Carriage Barn at C.H. Moore Homestead, 219 East Woodlawn Street. Attendees will have the opportunity to learn about the 80 Civil War veterans buried at the plot and hear about the restoration process. The reception will also include photos of the restoration project and biographical sketches of those buried here. The ceremony will include a dedication of a new information sign by Joey Long, director of the DeWitt County Museum, the Bloomington Normal American Legion Color Guard, with a live bugle player and tribute to military personnel. Live vocalists Walt and Linda Hunt Oler, the restoration story by Terry Lemmel, DeWitt County Genealogical Society president, and a blessing by Pastor Scott Marsh. Parking will be available in the empty lot at Center and Woodlawn Streets. Attendees are encouraged to bring lawn chairs because seating is limited. In case of inclement weather, the event will take place entirely at the Carriage Barn. And that's it today for part 1 of the Decatur Herald and Review. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with part 2.